It's sinister enough that Ralph Reed simply never ages. And then you see the political agenda. The former head of the Christian Coalition is today founder and chairman of the Faith and Freedom Coalition, which recently concluded its Road to Majority conference in Florida. Excellent coverage of the gathering appeared in Deseret News under the byline of religion reporter Maya Jaradat, and I am happy to have her with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thanks for having me.
You've described the Faith and Freedom Coalition as a faith-based conservative group changing American politics. So let's start there.
Well, I think that they really aim to be a grassroots group that, you know, reaches out directly to members of the kind of target communities, right? And then gets those members kind of motivated to start to do work in their own communities. They emphasized several times during the conference, I mean, numerous times they articulated how important, you know, grassroots action is on these issues and in getting the vote out. So I think that's a really critical thing to think about, is the way they're trying to sow seeds in individuals who will go back out and not just carry the messaging, but, you know, start to kind of take action to create a groundswell that will, you know, shift the political atmosphere to the right.
So what's their vision? What do they want to do in this coalition and have members do?
Well, I mean, as far as the broader vision, it was interesting because they were talking more about the First Amendment, about religious freedom, than they were the Second Amendment. So that was really interesting to me because Second Amendment issues are such a kind of foundational part of the right and, you know, the Republican Party. But the focus this time around was on First Amendment issues and, you know, the kind of threat too that if the Democrats take away your First Amendment rights, then they're coming for your second. That's the way they kind of stacked things up. There was a lot of conversation about critical race theory and a need to get rid of that. They framed it as racist and divisive. And then one of the strategies that I thought was really interesting, this kind of came up in connection to critical race theory, is this idea that, you know, so on the one hand, they talk a small government agenda, but then on the other hand, they say, well, no, we need to be controlling education and certain elements so students aren't getting things like critical race theory. So that was interesting to me because there's a kind of contradiction in that, right? Mm-hmm. There's also some acknowledgement of this contradictory stance and a very open and, you know, articulated goal of changing the strategy of the Republican Party to some extent. And that was what I found the most fascinating, because they said, you know, the Democrats have been smart and kind of taking some of the smaller offices, you know, local offices, state offices, things like this. And they said, we need to kind of pull a page from their playbook. And the Republican Party, they said, they felt had been overly focused on the House of Representatives and on presidential elections. And now, as Ron Johnson said, now they needed to kind of focus on the down ballot. I mean, all of it, not just the House of Representatives and the presidential election, but down ballot. And so they need to, you know, get conservative judges, you know, everywhere they can. And they need to get, you know, city councils and school boards and all of that. And it was really interesting to hear this strategy articulated so openly, because it's something that I've been picking up as a reporter in the past year. I've talked to pastors and I've talked to other, you know, citizens who are just conservatives who have said the same thing, that, you know, I've talked to pastors who are urging congregants to run for office. And when I say pastors, I'm talking about more conservative-leaning pastors. And I've talked to conservative Christians who have, you know, said that they're throwing their hats into the political ring. So I feel like we're going to see more of an influence of kind of politics, you know, surrounding faith coming into more elections.
Mm-hmm. Maya, who were some of the luminaries present and who got the most applause?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, on everyone's lips, you know, a lot of people obviously want to see Trump run again in 2024. It was shocking to me how almost everyone said the same thing. It was like, okay, well, if Trump doesn't run, we love DeSantis. It was DeSantis, DeSantis, DeSantis. But I'll tell you who got, I mean, to me, the most astounding amount of applause, who was really working the crowd, and the crowd was really responding to him, was Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson of North Carolina. I mean, he just knows how to talk. it was like he was preaching, you know, and they really responded to that. So the energy was just incredible when Robinson spoke. And then Ted Cruz, really, he knows how to talk too, and got quite a response. Pence got a pretty good response too, but the ones that really stand out in my mind, you know, are Robinson and Cruz. But people love DeSantis. They really do. And a lot of people are thinking about 2022, you know, midterms, and how critical that will be to the Republican Party. But a lot of them are already thinking 2024, and they look to Florida as an example, as a Republican run state that seems to be, you know, on a surface level and according to their standards, doing well. And so as an example of maybe how a Republican-run country under DeSantis would look.
You've written that the political right worries that religion-driven conservatives may be less engaged. What are they doing to re-engage them?
That's a great question. I feel like the concern was articulated quite a bit. And I feel like throughout the conference, there were a lot of concerns that were articulated and not as many solutions. But I do think that there's a lot of outreach right now happening towards pastors. I think particularly towards pastors of the Latino or Latinx community and the Black community as well. There were 500 Hispanic pastors and, you know, community leaders, they said. Mm-hmm. And I found that to be a very significant number of pastors. And then they said that they had 200 Black pastors and community leaders there. So I do think that there's a real attempt to reach out, particularly to the Hispanic community. They very, very accurately, I think, are sizing up. You can't speak about the Hispanic community in a monolithic way, of course. I mean, there's a huge range, of course, depending on what country and the individual, right? But I think that to speak in more broad brushstrokes, as the Hispanic population increasingly moves away from Catholicism and is moving towards, you know, evangelicalism, the Pentecostal church, you know, different Protestant movements, they are also moving towards the Republican Party. As you know, many white evangelicals are Republicans, so are going the Hispanic population. And I think that the Republican Party has really honed in on that and is really working it. I mean, that's what I saw at Faith and Freedom Coalition, and trying to work that in a grassroots way. And so these Hispanic pastors that were here, you know, and that aren't afraid to be political are going to go back and you know, talk to the congregations, I assume.
You know, I was actually concerned about the diversity that you describe at the Road to Majority gathering. I'm interested in you talking a little bit more about the kinds of people the message seems to be reaching.
Yeah, I was also interested seeing the Latino population there didn't surprise me, because so many of the family values, you know, conservative values are a part, I think, a deep part of the culture. So that wasn't surprising to me. But seeing, you know, Black Americans there was surprising to me. I mean, because, you know, the for the most part, I mean, the black community has supported the Democrats, you know, overwhelmingly. And so, yeah, I was surprised to see African-American voters there. And what some of them told me was that they actually feel that the Republican Party is a better fit for their values as Christians and their family values and things like this. I feel that, you know, Trump did gain, obviously, some points last time around with black voters. He made some progress with both black women and black men. And I think that they like his kind of those that are going for Trump and the Republican Party, particularly like Trump because of his kind of populist, you know, and tell it like it is and straightforwardness. I think they find that appealing. Some of the black voters that I spoke to at Faith and Freedom told me that they feel that some of the Democrats, the rhetoric is a little bit kind of condescending and patronizing, you know, that all of this, oh, you people have been nothing but slaves and you poor people and you need help. And, you know, I think that some black Americans find some of that rhetoric, that pitying almost rhetoric as demoralizing and lacking dignity, you know, and they feel that. Republicans engage with them more just as people, just as Americans who, you know, have their own dignity just on their own right and are not just, oh, you were once slaves and we're so sorry. I think they find a kind of lack of dignity in that. It's kind of hard to explain.
Yeah. As ever, more progressive Americans seem oblivious to the level of organizing that is happening on the political religious right and to how attractive the message is to a number of voters. Do you see that as a kind of we won the election so they can't hurt us anymore naivete?
You know what? I love this question because I think it's spot on, and I think that it points to something that was discussed a great deal last week at the Faith and Freedom Coalition, which is the role of the media. And I have to tell you, as a member of the mainstream media, listening to a lot of the things they said about the mainstream media, I actually agreed with a lot of what they said about how the mainstream media does indeed, I absolutely agree that it gives more platform nowadays to progressive voices. And you know, while I understand the importance of that, I do feel that there is this kind of blackout on you know, what the voices on the right are saying. And I think that's a really bad move on the part of the media because I think that, look, the foundation of democracy is that we be able to listen to both sides and we be able to engage, right? And this idea of a, you know, civil debate is I think, a foundation of democracy. And, you know, the left can't engage with the right if they're not listening to voices on the right, you know, number one. Number two, I mean, look what happened in 2016. You know, the media and so many people on the left were so surprised when Trump won. Well, maybe they wouldn't have been so surprised if they'd been listening to the right and not been so busy trying to elevate progressive voices. And I understand the need right now, you know, to elevate voices that progressive voices and black voices that have been oppressed historically. But there's got to be balance that we're also including voices from the right in the most mainstream, you know, outlets. So people on the, you know, left and right, I mean, everyone needs to be getting a spectrum of views so they have a full picture of what's happening in the country. And I'm a huge believer in thinking outside of these partisan boxes, actually, and that we need to dialogue to make any sort of progress in this country. And you can't dialogue if you don't know what the other side is saying. So, I mean, the kind of way that the left just, seems to have no idea what's happening on the right or what they're saying, kind of frightening to me. Because I think that it's just going to sow more and more division. And I mean, what we need to be doing now in this country is to build bridges.
Maya, last question. Was there one particular theme or threat or sight at the gathering that has been keeping you awake at night?
To be honest, the thing that has left me a little bit concerned, just as a citizen now, and not as a journalist, but as a citizen, I felt like the speeches were much more focused on problems than they were solutions. And I felt that most of the speeches I heard were full of kind of fear-mongering and you know, outright hate-mongering towards the left. There was this constant conflating of Democrats, you know, as godless, as Marxist, as socialist, and then all of that is conflated, of course, with evil. And it's something I've noticed in my reporting in, you know, almost a year now. I've been focusing, you know, on so many things, but I'm very interested in you know, the intersection, obviously, of religion and politics, and particularly Christian nationalism. And there was just this continual kind of drum beating of, you know, I've heard it again and again, of evil, you know, it's mm-hmm. that it's a battle of good versus evil. Mm-hmm. And I heard it in the audience, you know, amongst audience members, and it's embedded in speeches, this, you know, loose and fast kind of equating of Democrats with socialism and evil and godlessness. And it's not true. There are plenty of Democrats who are Christian and Jewish and Muslim, and they're not godless, you know. And I think that there's a real danger to that kind of rhetoric. I think that, you know, those kind of blanket categorizations are very dangerous and, you know, will lead to a complete breakdown of communication between the two parties. And again, I just think that communication, you know, is so critical to moving the country forward.
Maya Jaradat is religion reporter at Deseret News and the author of the book, The Unchosen, The Lives of Israel's New Others. We'll link to her articles about the recent Faith and Freedom Road to Majority Conference from stateofbelief.com. Maya, this is has been really helpful. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. I have enjoyed this immensely and learned a lot from this show. I hope you feel some of the same. Your donations help keep us on the air. Information on how to donate is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Be a part of the conversation. Social media helps connect like-minded people in conversation and company. I'd ask you to share State of Belief with just one person this week for whom you think this might be helpful. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy, that State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. Yes, he was. He was.